From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Friday, January 13th, 2017. And on this day, Maine's rural hospitals brace for a potential repeal of the Affordable Care Act, and we'll hear from some Maine women who will be attending the Women's March on Washington next week. That's all ahead in a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners and by USM's Muskie School of Public Service Masters of Policy Planning and Management, preparing students to be a force for positive change in their communities.
The former holdings of the Great Northern Paper Company in Millinocket have been sold to a local nonprofit group for the princely sum of $1. Those involved with the redevelopment of the acreage say they are confident they can bring jobs back to an area that's been hit hard by the closure of paper mills. A.J. Higgins has more.
Our Gatardon, a local nonprofit dedicated to community and economic development in the Millinocket area, will now oversee the redevelopment of the former GNP mill and its 1,400 acres. Michael Madure, chairman of the Millinocket Town Council, says the acquisition marks a turning point for the community.
By Akatadon partnering with the town of Millinocket to acquire the mill site gives us finally control over our own ability to move forward. We're not depending on any given company, any conglomerate, any financial group, or anything else. We now have an active part in taking our own financial security into our own hands and move it forward as we envision it to go.
Madure says our Gatardon would like to convert the site into a bio-industrial park, and the town council is assisting the effort by waiving some of the $164,000 in back taxes owed in exchange for some land. Madure says the council also voted to delay a foreclosure auction on the properties for 6 months to provide time to resolve remaining tax liabilities. The IRS has a tax lien on the mill property of nearly $1.5 million. Akatadon, meanwhile, is exploring opportunities for federal grant funding of the redevelopment effort with help from Sean DeWitt, a Millinocket native who is the director of the World Resources Institute in Washington, D.C. Madure says DeWitt is one of several skilled volunteers within the group.
We have a man in there who is an investment banker. We have a gentleman who writes million-dollar grants. We have electrical engineers. We have civil engineers. One gentleman has run a multi-million-dollar nonprofit organization himself, and these men are still in their 30s. We got lucky in the town of Millinocket, and in that fact that these guys have volunteered their time and their efforts to come back and help because they love their hometown so much.
Madure says he expects that it could take 6 months to a year to reach a point where the property is being actively marketed. But he says the community has already received some inquiries from prospective developers. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm A.J. Higgins.
Hospitals, especially rural ones, are bracing for a possible repeal of the Affordable Care Act. If the 80,000 Mainers who have insurance through the marketplace lose coverage, hospitals say they'll have to absorb more costs from patients who can't afford care. At Bridgeton Hospital today, administrators and staff met with Senator Angus King to tell him a repeal of the federal health care law without a viable replacement would be catastrophic for quality care and local economies. Patty White reports.
When it comes to rural hospitals, Bridgeton is one of the best. It was recently named among the top 20 critical access hospitals across the U.S. by the National Rural Health Association. But President and CEO David Frum says the hospital will likely have to reduce services if the ACA is repealed without a viable replacement.
Quite simply put, repealing without an option behind that has devastating effects, not only in terms of the care for our community, but for this organization in terms of its livelihood and ability to continue to provide services as it has for the last 100 years.
Frum says about 8% of the hospital's patients have insurance through the Affordable Care Act's marketplace. If those patients lose that insurance, the hospital won't be able to absorb the cost of providing free care without reducing or cutting services. And along with that, says Frum, will come layoffs for some of its 300 employees.
In our community, Bridgeton Hospital is the largest employer and would have a certain impact on this community as well.
Statewide, hospitals are already operating at a loss or skating on thin ice, says Jeff Austin of the Maine Hospital Association. He says the average operating margin is 1%.
The number of hospitals who are actually in the red, who are below zero, is around 15 to 20. So around a third or more for the past several years.
And if Mainers who receive subsidized marketplace insurance coverage lose it, Austin estimates it will cost hospitals $200 million a year.
That's not even in the ballpark of something that's absorbable.
Beyond insurance coverage, the Affordable Care Act also extends a drug discount program to rural hospitals. If that goes away, says Austin, that will cost an additional $15 million a year for Maine's rural hospitals.
This is a serious secondary result from repeal that people aren't really talking about.
Independent Senator Angus King says he's concerned about the health and economic implications of repealing the ACA.
In many rural towns in Maine, the hospital's the largest employer. You take away 5, 10, 12% of their revenues, they're going to have to shrink. There's just the math doesn't work otherwise. And I don't think people in Washington who are so hell-bent for repeal are really focusing on what's going to happen.
King says he wants to improve the Affordable Care Act rather than replace it. David Frum of Bridgeton Hospital says the ACA isn't perfect, but its benefits far outweigh the negatives. Keep people covered, he says, but protect patients against high deductibles.
The average consumer, if they have a high deductible plan of $5,000 or $10,000, actually, most folks have available cash of about $2,000. So that ends up being bad debt. When you have a high deductible plan, you can't pay the high deductible. That ends up being a burden on the hospital.
Jeff Austin says he wants to see Congress hold off on striking the ACA until new language is ready to go and be adopted. Any uncertainty, even temporary, he says, is harmful. Late Friday afternoon, the House joined the Senate in taking the first step to repeal the health care law. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
In just over a week, tens of thousands of people are expected to flock to the nation's capital in a show of solidarity for the rights of women and other citizens of the world. The action comes in the wake of a divisive, bitter political season and the election of Republican Donald Trump. A few thousand Mainers are planning to make the trek. Jennifer Mitchell spoke to a few of them.
On January 21st at 10 a.m., when thousands assemble near the Capitol, Donald Trump will have been sworn in as the nation's 45th president.
The transition, I think, has been demoralizing and frightening for a lot of people, myself included.
But Genevieve Morgan, a writer from Portland who's helping organize the Maine contingent, says for her, this is not an anti-Trump rally. Rather, it's a demonstration in support of basic principles which seem to be in peril in the wake of Trump's election.
There's a large percentage of us that still believe in what we think is great about America, which is freedom, liberty for all, opportunity for all, equal opportunity for women, access to health care, equal opportunity for minorities, for immigrants, and basically a fair and just society.
My name is Anita Charles. I am attending the march in Washington with my husband and four of my five children.
Anita Charles works in education. Next week, the family will pile into the car and make the journey from Maine to D.C. for what may be a long, grueling day out in the elements. Charles' family is perhaps more diverse than the average Maine clan.
I have children with disabilities. I have one who is legally blind and has mild cerebral palsy. I have another who is on the autism spectrum. I have children who are brown-skinned. I have children who are internationally adopted, and therefore that makes them immigrants.
And one of her children performs as a drag queen in Boston. Charles fears a Trump administration could mean a world where some of her children don't have adequate health care and others are regarded as second-class citizens.
In part, I think this is a protest. We are marching in protest.
For Bangor historian Trudy C., it's not a protest. She says she'd rally for such an event no matter who was in the White House. C. grew up in a New York housing project and wants issues surrounding civil rights, health care, and poverty to be addressed.
I would like today's children not to have to go backwards in time. I would not like to feel that some of the things I've worked for are just tossed away in the wind. But there are great people who voted in both ways on this election. You know, some loved their candidate, some did not. I really think we have to work together. Like I said, I would have gone no matter who won.
C says she's marching for the Equal Rights Amendment, for health care for people with chronic health issues, such as her brother who's struggling with a rare autoimmune disorder. And she says for all women who never had a chance. The nationwide action began, as many things do these days, with a few posts on social media. Meanwhile, the Maine March Facebook page, emblazoned with Old Glory and a Maine Cooncat, is abuzz with plans. Some intrepid parents are even planning to take their toddlers along. Others say they want to go but can't. Organizer Kristen Farnham says one 70-year-old woman came up with an idea called March for Me.
And she has asked that people who are going to march in D.C. bring along and sort of adopt the name of a person in Maine who can't be there.
There's also a sister march going on in Augusta that day for those who can't make the 700-mile journey to Washington. In all, organizers say 22 buses carrying 1,200 marchers from Maine will be rolling to D.C. next week, and they expect another 2,000 or so to get there under their own steam. The whole gathering is expected to top 200,000 in what organizers say will likely be the biggest inaugural action in the country's history. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Jennifer Mitchell.
And finally, you may have seen the story. A team of paranormal investigators in Maine has captured what it says appears to be the photo of the ghost of a woman at the City Theater in Biddeford. Legend has it a young actress who died during a performance in 1904 still haunts the theater. Eva Gray received 4 curtain calls that night, but as Susan Sharon reported in this story, in 2004, she never got the chance to enjoy her fame.
Built just after the Civil War, the elegant City Theater has been the venue for movies, musicals, and full-length ballets. But there are still dark corners, creaky floorboards, and secret doors that have yet to be discovered. And there is also a long list of unexplained phenomena that actors and stagehands have experienced over the years.
I was here alone. It was about 11 or 12 at night, and this switch that you're looking at can only be operated from here.
Thomas Mullane was a stage manager for a recent performance that required rope work in a remote section of the theater. He'd been working backstage by himself for several hours and made sure to check that a light switch in the costume room was turned off. Several hours later, he noticed it was turned back on, so he walked way back up toward the rafters a second time.
And I came back up here. It started getting cold, and I got to the top and turned off the light and used my headlamp to get back downstairs. And when I got back downstairs, the light was back on. There's a passage down to the lighting booth. So at first I thought somebody in the lighting booth was playing a trick on me. And I crossed over into the back of the theater and checked to see if anybody was in the lighting booth. But there's nobody there. And
don't lean against that railing. You're making me nervous.
Oh, don't worry. Okay. It's pretty sturdy.
My name's Bill Cook. I was doing the show Annie here and stayed late after rehearsal to work on a backdrop and felt a little prickly on the back of my neck and turned around and saw up in the balcony, I saw a vertical shaft of light that panned over and went onto the wall and then peeled up around the wall up into the area of the light booth. My first thought was that it was a car. I thought it was that, and then I realized that we're actually about 4 stories up above the ground, and there was no windows anywhere.
Some actors have described seeing stage lights swaying for no apparent reason, hearing whispers or someone call their name. At least one claims to have seen the ghost of a young woman in the wings, and just about everybody who spends any amount of time here describes feeling an unusual presence. Janet Ross is the artistic director for City Theater.
And so we don't know what it means. I see her as more of a good luck charm, actually. And I do feel things, hear things, sense things, but never anything that makes me frightened.
Like many people associated with the theater, Ross is familiar with the tragic story of singer Eva Grey. Back in 1904, on Halloween night, Grey was performing with a traveling theater company. A newspaper account described her as having a lovely stage presence, wearing a black gown with brilliant spangles that shone in the footlights, and singing in a clear, sweet soprano voice. Business manager Renee O'Neill says Grey's performance was well received.
Eva came on after the first act, sang her song, Goodbye, Little Girl, Goodbye, and they loved her so much that she received a call for an encore. So she actually did three encores. Then when she left the stage after the third, there was still a lot of applause, but she never came back.
What happened next is the subject of theater lore. Some have described Eva plunging off the theater balcony. Some believe she shot herself. And still others believe her final song was a message to her beloved 3-year-old daughter who had accompanied the theater group on tour. None of that is true.
The sound of the bugle is calling, fare thee well, fare thee well. The soldiers in line are falling, fare thee well.
After performing the song, Eva Grey was seen putting her left hand on her heart. She collapsed backstage, wavered in and out of consciousness, and died less than an hour later. A reporter for the Biddeford Weekly newspaper wrote that members of the theater company were greatly broken up over her sudden death and found it difficult to continue with the performance, but did so anyway. Grey had been having trouble with her heart, the story says, along with marital troubles that weighed heavily upon her.
Don't cry, little girl, don't cry. By and by, little girl, by and by, in my uniform of blue, I'll come marching home to you. Goodbye, little girl, goodbye.
And that was 16-year-old Carissa Lee Staples singing Eva Grey's final encore song, Goodbye, Little Girl, Goodbye, for a performance in 2004. The group EVP Paranormal told the Portland Press Herald it has captured the image of a female ghost in the theater and plans to do some further investigation. And that's This Day in Maine for Friday, January 13th, 2017. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team, I'm Nora Flaherty. Have a wonderful weekend.